Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
And welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. This time we'll be looking at the forthcoming budget. What's the world of property hoping for from the Chancellor's red box? In this episode, we'll be talking about the budget on October the 27th. What can Chancellor Rishi Sunak do to maintain the momentum in the property market following the ending of the stamp duty holiday? How does he intend to turn Generation Rent into Generation Buy, as Boris Johnson has pledged, and on which the outcome of the next election could depend? What will be the Chancellor's stance on buy-to-let? Could we see more taxes? Or, finally, a recognition that the private rented sector is a vital provider of housing to those who can't afford to buy and those who love the flexibility of renting. I'm joined as usual by Dominic Agge, CEO of Winkworth, and also by Anthony Emerson of Trinity Financial, the mortgage broker. Guys, great to be with you. So first to Dominic, what are you hoping for in the budget? What are your clients telling you that the Chancellor should be doing?
So I think there's sort of personal hope and realistic expectation. But from the clients we speak to, I suppose the areas we'd like to see some change on, first is business rates. We have a commercial arm to our business, and we're finding for landlords that their business rates are affecting the ability to transact. So people are happy to pay the market rents, and people are happy to take occupation of prime retail sites, but business rates are prohibiting that. So we'd like to see that amended in the long for a sustainable future for shops in the high street.
So what would you see as a decent substitute for business rents that would be fair for everyone involved?
I think the rent part is not such the problem. It's the business rates, and clearly it puts the high street retailer at a disadvantage to the online retailer. So we'd like to see a balancing up of that sort of platform, the competitive nature, so that they're both starting on the same basis, really, and paying the same tax, and it's not a disadvantage to be on the high street. Clearly, rates have gone up for many, many years, and rents probably haven't followed suit.
So Rishi Sunak should be thinking about the ways to improve our failing high streets. Yeah. Now, can we just talk about the wider state of the economy? Fuel prices are going up and so is inflation. Do you suspect that this might start to have an impact on the demand for homes? And if we're going to go into a period of sustained higher inflation, how could this affect the property market?
So I think this is the great debate. Clearly, there are big signs of inflation coming down the pipeline. At the moment, we're not seeing an impact on the property market, and buyer demand is brisk, and the property market is at brisk as well. I think the main concern really with inflation is the reaction in terms of interest rates. So everyone sort of looks back at history and worries about previous decades where interest rates were up to 15%. I think we're in a very different position where we're very, very low interest rates, and there's quite a lot of headroom to go. But clearly, that's always the concern with inflation. The other part of the debate, obviously, is that this is a transitory phase. And so that whilst we might see small increases in interest rates, these would be fairly nominal. And the bigger picture is we're in a world where there is exponential growth in technology, and technology is actually a deflationary pressure. So we may see that once we get past the kind of recovery mode of COVID and the sort of charge resources, international charge resources, that the inflation might flatten out. And certainly I believe that's what the banker are betting on at the moment.
Now, the planning reforms, those very controversial guidelines on planning that have been scrapped by Michael Gove, who's taken over as Secretary of State for Housing. Have you got some big ideas on better ways to reform the rules? so as to give us the quality developments that the country frankly needs and also to breathe new life into our high streets?
I think the only real way is to get the local communities on board. I think that's probably been an error of the last several decades, is, you know, over-centralisation of planning, which is in, which, you know, you're faced basically fighting your local communities. And then you get all these debates around NIMBYism. I mean, if there's a transparent local approach towards planning, then I think people will be much more on board and you'll be able to develop more houses and they'll be more sympathetic with their local areas. People, as if planning is dealt with too regionally or centrally, people don't see the benefits of new homes. You know, there is the SIL where there is money coming back into these communities in return for developers building houses. But if that's over too wide an area, the community that's directly affected by the development doesn't see the benefit. Now, if you can put those two together so they can see that they get a new, new infrastructure into their village as a result of new houses, and they have they're able to affect the style of those houses and make sure they're sympathetic, then I think you'll get a much more sort of virtuous circle in terms of house building and communities being on board with that house building.
So what you want to see is SLIMBYism, something logical in my backyard, not more NIMBYism.
Yes, I think people local communities know if houses come with rewards for those local communities in terms of better infrastructure, they know the best way to deliver those houses because they know the areas, they know how the village or the town works best and where it can afford to have more houses. So and the style of those houses that will sort of suit the community. So I think it can be a positive thing.
Now, buy-to-let, it's been hit by successive tax changes. How do you think Rishi Sunak should view it? Because, and I'm sure you have the sense of this, it's driving landlords out of the industry and is pushing up rents.
Yeah, exactly. I think buy-to-let's been hammered for a number of years now, and arguably it's right on the cusp of having gone too far. The tax changes, you know, there was a levelling up and giving the first-time buyer the opportunity, and I totally understand that. But over the last year or so, there's definitely been some headwinds for them. You know, they have had, obviously, the pandemic where tenants haven't paid rents and they haven't been able to address that. And the courts are now very, bunged up and there's a huge backlog, so they can't address it now. And the average buy-to-let landlord relies on that income. You know, they're much larger percentage of their income than someone who's relying on a share portfolio. It's around 42%. So suddenly non-rent payment is pretty devastating. So I think all those things have meant that, you know, with rents, certainly in London, where rents went down 20% because people left to move to the country or went to move, live at home, they've had some big headwinds. There's now a survey that came out recently that said 20% of buy-to-let landlords are thinking of selling off one or more of their properties. There are 5 million buy-to-let properties in the UK. So that's, you know, potentially a huge amount of properties being removed that are providing accommodation for young professionals to start their careers in city centres. So I think it's a big problem, and to go any further in terms of taxation against buy-to-let landlords would be a big mistake, I think.
Do you think the government fails to recognise just how many households rely on the private rented sector? It's about 5 million households in total.
Yeah, I think it's just, I understand the agenda is for everyone to own their own home. And I certainly, I support that. I think we should all have a chance to own our own home. Yes, I just can't. There isn't a solution in place to write off that many buy-to-let properties. You know, say 20%, maybe, it's up to approaching a million homes, isn't it? That would be lost for people to go and move and find their career with. You know, they need that flexibility of accommodation to go and get the job. So build to rent is obviously there, and that's the future that's being pushed. I don't think it's there. Certainly in London, there aren't the sites coming online to support a lack of supply from the buy-to-let sector.
We know that the levelling up is top of the government's agenda. Do you see the private rented sector as being crucial to that process?
I think it's a really important part to play. Yeah, I mean, you want diversity in the housing market. You know, you want some blocks, which are functional and cohabiting, and that's important. You want your secondhand properties to live in. You want a mix so people have options, and so there's flexibility. Well, there's mobility in the labour force, and I think, there aren't places to put blocks of flats in large parts of London. So, you need the rented two-bedroom garden flat in a Victorian house. So, I think it is an important part. I do, as I say, understand that if it was incentivised over a first-time buyer, that that's something you want to make the you want a level playing field, so both have an opportunity to acquire a property. But it needs to be done carefully, and I don't think they should be seen as the enemy, really.
Earlier this month, the Tory party conference, there was a big rumour going round that what Michael Gove, that is the new Secretary of State for Housing, would like is for the banks to really relax their mortgage lending criteria, which would allow, or so that's the argument, more people to climb onto the ladder. What's your view on that, Dominic?
Well, I'm sure Anthony will have some good views on it as a mortgage specialist. My own personal view is, I mean, clearly it's come a long way since 2007 and we don't want to repeat 2007. So I say relaxing mortgage regulation, I'm sure there's room for it, but let's not go back to those sort of self-cert mortgages which caused such a crisis in 2008. So I'm all for it. I think there is a two-tier market we've had, you know, which has been problematic since the pandemic, and that is that the houses have boomed and those with equity have had access to fantastic rates. Again, Anthony will probably steer me in the right direction, but those in flats haven't really, and the government have tried to incentivise the first-time buyer and to bring out support 95% loan-to-value mortgages, but it hasn't seemed to really had an impact in the flat market. So I think it's the right idea to try and support those first-time buyers and flats as well as just house owners who had larger equity in their properties.
I'm going to turn to Anthony and see what he thinks about this liberalisation of lending. Good idea or disaster?
I can see why it's very popular. I think there's a lot of people that we speak to on a regular basis that are coming to us saying, well, I'm paying £3,000 a month in rent. How come I can't justify a mortgage at, you know, £1,800, £2,000 a month? And I think while they see it as that at the moment, we are in a sort of low interest rate environment. We have got a lot of inflationary pressures on rates. And should we see those rates start to rise, I don't know how many people would be able to take that too easily. I think if we drop the lending criteria and we make it more available, we're also going to pour fuel onto the fire where property prices are increasing at a fairly significant rate at the moment. There is a supply and demand issue. We aren't building more houses. We're building loads of flats, which are great for first-time buyers, you know, younger professionals, but not really families. And I think it would just make that onward step into the housing market and everything else that little bit more tricky and more expensive. And the lenders are being pretty flexible at the moment. They have made it slightly more tricky to be able to prove your incomes, especially for the self-employed. But we're still getting 5 times income, some lenders up to 6 times income, which, where do you draw the line? You know, where is enough? So yes, I think there is talk by the government at the moment to have a look at people who have paid rentals at a much higher level and work that back into affordability. But I can't really see how the lenders would be able to bring that in.
Now, turning to generation rent that the government really wants to make generation buy, those 95% loans that they need, are those coming on stream? Are they just becoming more generally available?
When the pandemic hit, confidence in the market went. Lenders were unsure how property prices were going to be affected by it. And rightly so, they removed all the higher loan-to-value tierings, all the way down to sort of 80% loan-to-value. You were lucky if you could get that. With the confidence coming back, with property prices still appreciating, etc., and with government stimulus and support, etc., we've seen them come back into 95% mortgages, and also 95% mortgages at an affordable interest rate. We're looking at interest rates starting at around about 2.67 odd percent for a 95% mortgage at the moment. One of the issues is that we have got a sort of ceiling on how large a loan the lenders will give at that level, which doesn't really work for the London market, but obviously it does work for the average house price across the country. Lenders have to make a national decision rather than a regional decision. So I find that quite tricky. to see how they can get around that for London in particular. We've also got more and more lenders coming into the marketplace now. The government has flooded in a lot of cheap money, and they are trying to force the lenders to be more flexible in this area. And we have seen a large number of lenders re-enter the market. I looked this morning, there's 18 plus lenders giving decent interest rates and options to buyers. I think the biggest thing, obviously, is London market. We capped out at about £600,000 as total borrowing at 95%, which doesn't work for larger family houses, but does for flats.
So things are looking quite rosy at the moment if you're a borrower. If the Bank of England starts to ease rates upwards, do you think there'll be an immediate impact on the level of mortgage rates?
I think that the immediate change wouldn't be felt if they raised it by 0.25%. I don't think we'd see a direct correlation between that and interest rates because of the fact that the government gave a lot of cheap money and cheap funding to the banks in order to encourage them to lend. That money, I believe, is still going to be in the sort of market for the next sort of 4 years. So I don't think we're going to see an immediate change. Lenders are still trying to build market share and sort of improve their position in the market. So I do think we would see a rise, but maybe not a direct correlation between the two.
Now, the budget, the first-time buyer stamp duty exemption, do you think that should be higher?
I think the Chancellor has given sufficient help to first-time buyers as far as stamp duty is concerned. When you think about the fact that the average property price is under £300,000 and he's not charging you any stamp duty on that, it's about as helpful as you can be to the nation as a whole. It doesn't maybe work for London in particular, but he is helping Londoners in a way by helping them between 300,000 and half a million by giving them £5,000 reduction. On the point of stamp duty, I think one of the things that is hurting the marketplace in general and creating a bit of a supply and demand issue, which is therefore increasing property prices, is the extra 3% loading that the Chancellor applies to people buying secondary properties, etc. I think personally, if we could, the Chancellor could look at that in particular and make that less punitive, I think we would see more transactions in the property market and we would see more stock becoming available. People in the UK who have larger properties, £1 million plus, etc., are paying a huge amount in stamp duty in addition to what they should have if they have another property in the background. And I think that's an area where he could look at stimulating things without affecting too much of the broader market.
How about landlords vis-a-vis lenders? Are lenders looking kindly on buy-to-let landlords at the moment?
Buy-to-let landlords have had a very, very tricky past 5 years, I guess. We saw a number of different things happen. We had the tax relief on the buy-to-let rental sector removed. We also then had involvement from our regulator, which basically made it a hell of a lot more difficult for the lenders to be able to justify giving you affordability on the rents. We've seen a tightening of the rental stress test calculator, which is meaning that the average property is only really able to get somewhere between 55 and 65% loan to value based on the strength of the rental using the stock standard rental stress test calculator. That's requiring landlords to have to put in a much higher deposit, and that would also then limit the amount of properties that they would be able to acquire because they're having to put down a lot more capital right from the get-go. We've also seen a fairly significant penalty being imposed on a portfolio landlord. And a portfolio landlord is classed as anybody who has four or more rental properties. Now, I personally think as a regulator, you'd much rather want to have portfolio landlords because you go and inspect one portfolio, which could be a number of properties. As long as that landlord is in place with that and he understands the rules, then obviously they can apply that across his entire portfolio. When you've got one buy-to-let in a family, you've got to do a lot more work to regulate that business. So I think the hardest thing for me is to say, well, these landlords want to the government wants to regulate landlords, and they don't want to have slum housing, and they want to have good quality stock. Penalizing a landlord to be able to acquire the property in the first place is not the answer. Dominic was right in the fact that if we lose 20% of our private rental sector, the government isn't building more social housing at the level that we would lose the private rental sector, and we're going to then have more increases in rental income, rental charges, because of the fact that there's going to be less supply.
I'm just going to go back to Dominic on this one. Anthony makes a very good point that the private rented sector has to a very large extent replaced social housing in many areas. Do you think that the government appreciates that enough?
I think they're beginning to. There's sort of noises that people are understanding. The problem is there's not enough social housing being built, and the sort of burdens have been put on the private landlord to solve. So it feels as though the government may be seeing that, but it's obviously reversing a policy of the last decade or so of putting more and more onto the private sector.
Now, one last question to both you gentlemen. To you, Anthony, what's the biggest threat to the supply of mortgage finance at the moment? What's the thing that you most fear when you wake up in the middle of the night?
At the moment, it's a combination of inflation and then obviously how that impacts the confidence in the property market. I think if inflation starts rising and we can't keep that in check, we are going to start seeing more expensive rates being put out there. I'm worried about how the general public are going to be able to accept that, given how long we've experienced the low pricing that we've had. And once the confidence is knocked, it's very, very difficult to bring that back. So I think any decisions that Rishi Sunak needs to take, he has to take those two things into account in equal measure. Confidence and inflation need to be played off against each other and both maintained as best he can with the limited resources he has left.
Now, Dominic, the Conservatives have always liked to be seen as the party of home ownership. How would you rate them on this? And if you rate them poorly, what kind of policies should they be adopting?
I think sort of trying hard, but haven't got there yet, would be my overall summary, I think, of the Tories. It's, you know, they've committed to supporting home ownership. They brought in, you know, they put the property market at the centre of their policy and come out of the pandemic, you know, to support construction. They had estate agents come out of lockdown sort of first so they could get the liquidity in the second home market. They brought in the stamp duty incentives to get the housing market moving. So They've been behind it, and I think that bodes well for the future that they will continue to be behind it during this government. But, you know, you do have to look in the other column and you say, well, you know, the housing minister's just gone because his policies were perceived to have failed and the sort of planning approach he was going to take wasn't popular. And so they brought in, Gove, a sort of Tory grandee to try and solve it. So I think they've still got a long way to go, and they haven't done it, but it's encouraging that they see it as central to their government.
Quickfire, Anthony, the one thing you want to see in the budget?
I'd like to see a little bit more help for buy-to-let landlords. I think the three or four big changes that they made was too much. I think one or two of those changes would have been sufficient to sort of pour a little bit of cold water on the fire. But I think we need to have a little bit of easing on the private rental sector.
And over to you, Dominic. The one thing you want Rishi Sunak to say?
So I stated my old message really on this one, which is stamp duty. So I think, as Anthony says, it's a national approach towards a regional property market, and I totally understand that for some £1 million plus is a very expensive property, but in London that is affecting young families, and that is a fairly common price for a property. So they are not being able to live in properties that fit them and fit their families. People who should be creating the room at the top are not trading because they're not downsizing because they don't want to pay the tax. So it's stopping an efficient and flowing property ladder, which would be good for everyone. So I'm pretty sure he won't, but that's what I'd like to see.
Dominic and Anthony, thank you very much for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange. It's been great to chat and share ideas. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast, where we'll be taking a look at the country market with a focus on a location that's becoming very popular among people moving out of London.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.